Welcome to Podcast Ed, the podcast of redefinedonline.org, covering the news and stories behind the new definition of public education. I'm David Hudson Tuthill, assistant editor of Redefined. On this episode, we speak to State Senator Jeff Brandis from Florida's 24th District. Senator Brandis pushes innovative education policies every year in the Florida legislature, and this year, SB 226 is no different. His bill would expand a mastery-based pilot program to any district in the state that wishes to participate. Brandis sees expanded opportunities for students with the flexibility of mastery-based education. As he puts it, the future of education under mastery-based learning will probably look a lot like the past, a quote-unquote one-room schoolhouse environment where students of different capabilities work with each other to help everyone rise. This interview took place by phone on April 12, 2019. Thank you for listening and enjoy the interview. All right, we are here with State Senator Jeff Brandis of the 24th District of Florida. Senator Brandis, how is the session going this year? I know with the new governor and new face in Tallahassee, what's the new session been like this year?
I think it's been a great session so far, and the governor's doing great. So I think everybody seems focused on the next couple of weeks and finishing session out strong. But I think you're going to see a lot of great policy coming out of the session.
Great. So we're here to talk, you know, Redefined, we're an education blog, school choice blog. So we want to talk about something we've written a lot about over the years, mastery-based education, or competency-based education, as it's been formally known. Last year, your bill, your mastery-based education bill died. It never got heard in the Senate Education Committee. This year, SB 226, which is your next attempt at it this year, it's sort of sailed through with wide bipartisan support. It's got an identical counterpart in the House. Sort of what's changed this year in the legislature that's made it possible to sort of push the pilot program into expanding, and also talk a little bit about what SB 226 is and what it'll do for the state of Florida.
Well, I think the significant change is you've got a new chair of education policy in Manny Diaz and Senator Diaz, and he is a different vision for where education should go. And I think he's bringing forth bold new ideas that recognize that new vision.
And so let's talk about mastery-based education itself. You had a pilot program bill, I believe it was 3 years ago, that was four counties participated in, including Pinellas County. I know Seminole High School is the notable school. So sort of talk about SB 226 and how and what it does to expand the pilot program statewide.
So our goal really is to make this whole area of public policy open to the entire state. We think we've had great success in a variety of areas that have implemented mastery-based learning. I really think this is part of the future of learning is letting kids kind of level up at their own pace. Everybody's used to playing video games. They're used to leveling up. They completely understand that concept. And how do we utilize technology in that conversation to think about education in a way that students can level up in? And so this is really what competency-based, mastery-based learning is all about, kind of moving away from the old sage on the stage model to more of a coaching model where we help students level up at their own pace, move along, and when they've mastered the topic, be able to move on to the next part of that rubric. It's what I think really is going to be part of the future of education. I think it's where the future wants to go, and part of what we do, and the reason we've been able to be forward thinking about so many of these different areas of policy is we're always asking, what does the future want? How do we get there today? And I think what the future wants is individualized learning plans for kids, and the ability to do that via technology, via mastery-based learning, is something that I think the state should make it a significant investment in. And I think before you can make that investment, you've got to have the policies that allow for it.
How do you scale something like this with the size and diversity? You know, you have so many rural counties that operate way differently than look differently than a county like Pinellas or Miami-Dade. This sounds all great on paper, and implementing data and technology into learning is clearly the way of the future. But how do you scale something like this so the entire state can participate? I know it's kind of a tough question.
No, it's not. I mean, I think like as anything else, you've got to start small, but you've got to think big, and you've got to have a plan to grow quickly. And I think that's what we're really focusing on. We've got a number of pilots that we think we can expand out those pilots. We think that there's a great opportunity using technology to help kids kind of learn. I mean, if you go on Khan Academy today, they have certain end of course kind of exams or quizzes you can take before you get a chance to move on so they understand your mastery of that subject. If we can break coursework down into what we would consider micro credits or micro classes, and helping you advance along the way, making sure that you're retaining that knowledge as you go, having you have a level up or move on at your own pace in different areas of education. I think that there are a variety of different classes that would lend themselves very well to mastery-based learning. I think there's a variety of classes that will not lend themselves to mastery-based learning, but we should allow education to be the laboratory that it is and these educational institutions to be the laboratories that they are. And how do we continue to encourage them to explore new methodologies? That's really what this is all about.
So let's talk about funding a little bit. So FEFP is, some of the FEFP funding is based on seat time, which, if correct me if I'm wrong, this bill removes some of the seat time requirements that are sort of codified in stature. So how will this, if this were something that were to be expanded statewide, if all of a sudden 20, 30 different school districts were like, yeah, this is what we want to move forward, are we going to have to rethink FEFP and how we fund, you know, the public education K-12 budget is what, almost a quarter of the entire state budget. So how does this reshape your thinking of how we fund traditional district schools?
Well, we're very used to funding like, for example, AP classes in a certain way, where we put a base amount of funding at the front end, and then based on the outcome of that exam, which is essentially a mastery-based exam, we fund an additional bonus, essentially. Why can't we use that model to expand that out? And so we have a base level of FEFP funding with a bonus at the end. I think there's a variety of different models that would work for that type of funding. We already do it in some areas, so we can just expand those out, but I think it will lend itself to building new models that incentivize everyone to help students succeed and to help them move up levels in an organized fashion. I think you can do that and not disrupt the overall model. But I think the great thing is there's going to be this hybrid that occurs. And that hybrid only occurs if you authorize the policy statewide, mm-hmm. and you help school districts think through the opportunities that come along with a mastery-based or competency-based platform.
So two of the, I guess, most triggering words in education policy are unfunded mandate. And I know this is not a mandate that districts can opt in, but there's also no sort of fiscal attached to your bill. So does this sort of give a district an out to avoiding doing this sort of transformational change? I mean, one of the biggest criticisms of this idea is just sort of like the way districts are systemically built is not necessarily conducive to transformational change, right? So as they're structurally built, does it seem impossible to you that something like this could ever really be implemented given how they're currently structurally built? And how do you begin to sort of unwind that to sort of bring mastery-based education to as many districts as possible?
So a number of years ago, I worked on a bill specifically related to blended learning, this idea that we can use technology and traditional classroom instruction as a kind of this hybrid model, and that we could potentially have some flexibility with class size as we move into this hybrid model, because it would lend itself to that type of flexibility. I think if we take that along with competency-based learning, now you have a whole structure by which we can use blended learning, use technology to tear down the kind of current walls that we're faced with pay caps because of class size, and to expand out the opportunities that come with utilizing technology and a more of a coaching model. I think those are just one of the ways where I see this not being an unfunded mandate at all, but offering more flexibility to school districts to rethink their current model and really focus on the students that want to learn this way. I'm somebody who believes all students learn in different ways. Some really are better at project-based learning. Others will do really well in a blended learning model where their teacher is acting more of a coach, and some will probably do best in the traditional format. That's okay. But what I know is that more options generally are better, and competition works, and that allowing students to play to their preference is something that I'm really excited about and really want to make sure that we have those tools available to school districts. We're not forcing anybody to use them, but they're available tools that I think the state should authorize and allow, and that's why this bill, blended learning, many of the other innovations that Florida's known for in its education space, I think really open up the opportunities for state schools, for charter schools, for state colleges, universities, all to explore these different ideas from mastery-based learning to more choice, to blended learning. I think all of these things play into a really robust ecosystem of education.
So when you said rethinking the current model, that made me thinking. That made got me thinking about Common Core, and I know Common Core means you ask 100 different people, you're going to get 100 different responses to what Common Core means to them. But I know you're very ideologically aligned with Governor DeSantis about things, and he and Commissioner Corcoran have sort of announced the plans to quote unquote scrap Common Core and come up with new curriculum standards. There's a new innovation chancellor being hired, Eric Hall, in the Department of Education, that's done some exciting stuff in North Carolina. So as the new curriculum sort of gets developed over the next year here in Florida, how closely are you working with the DOE and districts to prioritize mastery-based education, sort of like a new opportunity to sort of get these new systems in place? Have you had any discussions with the new innovation chancellor or with Commissioner Corcoran about like next steps in these processes, and what is that? Can you give us a hint of what that's going to look like in the next year and in maybe next year's session as well?
No, I have not had a chance to meet with the new innovation chancellor. But for me, it's really, let's get this bill across the finish line. Let's get it to the governor's desk signed. And then we can focus on all these follow-on conversations that I think are so important. Because I think it is important that school districts recognize this. I actually think in some ways we're kind of moving back into the one-room schoolhouse, where we have students of different capabilities working with each other to help everybody in the classroom rise. And that, to me, is what these different options allow for. That, to me, is what's so exciting to think about, is as we tear down the kind of traditional walls of education and we say, well, if we could rethink this, if we could rethink this whole model, what would it look like? How would we be able to pay teachers more? Because we know that's important. We've got to have high-quality teachers. How would we allow students to grow more and really focus on things that really help them get a job at the end? My whole kind of mantra is that, you know, that our goalposts can't be simply you got an education or you got a degree.
Right.
A degree is not where the goalpost is. A job is the goalpost. And so how do we focus on that being, how do we focus everything that we're doing, making sure that we're lining up to professions that are out there, that will be available to people who complete a series of their education. That to me is exciting, something that we should be focusing in on, something I look forward to working with the commissioner on, but something that I think we need to allow for more innovation in the space, because I think that's what drives societies forward.
Well, let's talk about, I guess, testing a little bit too, because this is all really interesting and great, but we still have these FSA mandates. So are you sort of considering pushing for an unwinding of some of these testing and accountability measures if master-based education is going to be a primary learning tool for students moving forward? I know, sort of putting that a different way, taking seat time off the books is a fundamental change, right, in how students' academic progression is handled in schools. But does the accountability of the FSA system sort of create disincentives in a mastery-based education curriculum?
No, I don't know that it does. I think it's something really positive about taking the temperature of the room. Mm-hmm. The whole thing with the standardized testing is we take the temperature of the state or of the school as a whole. The upside for mastery-based learning is we get to take the temperature of each individual student in virtual real time. So we'll know what's going on with any student. So we'll know where they're struggling. It shouldn't be a surprise that we're like, oh, we got the FSA at the end of the year and it says you're struggling. Well, we knew the entire time that child was struggling because they've been on this mastery-based portfolio.
Do you worry that mastery-based learning sequences may inevitably sort of kind of fall out of alignment with sort of accountability standards that are already in place? Because, you know what I'm saying?
No, not really. I mean, I think they would. You know, if I take the temperature of the room in real time and then somebody else takes the temperature of the room once out of the year, I should know at least, you know, I should at least know, you know, what the temperature was going to be the day before we took the temperature for the year. Right. So, and there should, I shouldn't be surprised when the temperature for the year comes out at a certain number. That to me is how we need to be thinking about this. I think in lieu of having this kind of one number that we have to assume happens, you know, all, you know, make assumptions for the entire year of learning gains, we'll be able to know in virtual real time what concepts individual students are struggling with. Imagine if we could have, you know, this concept of an individualized education plan, or IEP, is something that we do for special ed students. If we could have an IEP for every student, if we could allow every student to advance at their own pace and say, wow, you're really struggling with this one concept. What if we taught this in a different way? Maybe that would help you think about this concept differently and help you kind of get over that block that's keeping you from advancing here. To me, the ability to use mastery-based learning in that format is really exciting, because we will be able to identify that earlier, make some course corrections, and hopefully get through that challenge and on to the next one. And what we generally find is it's usually one or two concepts that hold people back. It's not that the entire class is struggling with something. It's one or two people in the class are struggling with one individual concept where other people have kind of figured it out and moved on. And once we can get these handful of people through that concept, they'll catch up really, really quickly. But they're struggling with one or two concepts. The question is, how quickly can we identify that struggle? How quickly can we help divert that conversation into helping that person move on beyond that? To me, that's what mastery-based learning will allow ultimately.
And I guess, is the FSA the standardized test for that model, maybe? Are we maybe need to move something to something that looks like the MAP assessment, Measure of Academic Progress, where you take it three times a year instead of one and you can course correct? Do we need to do any fundamental changes to standardized testing itself to align more correctly with mastery-based education philosophy?
Well, I mean, you may get rid of standardized testing altogether if you have true mastery-based education.
Okay.
Because if you get rid of why do I need to take the temperature of the room if I'm taking the temperature every day? There's never a surprise there, right? And so why will it be all that different? No, I think it'll take years for us to have enough confidence in the structure that we're willing to make that statement. But I think that's the trajectory we're on. There's no doubt. If you enter into a mastery-based system, there should be no daylight between the temperature of the room at the day before we take this statewide standardized test and the day we take the standardized test. We should know exactly what you know. We should know what concepts you're struggling with. And we should know within a range, obviously, where that's all going to fall out. And there should be essentially no surprises by when you take that once a year test. But if we're testing every day, that to me is, or you know, on a regular basis, not every day, but on a regular basis, using mastery-based principles, then we'll know exactly what that student knows in a much deeper way than the FSA could ever tell us.
Right. Well, like you said, I guess I'll finish with this last question. Like you said, it's going to take sort of years to sort of self-actualize and realize what this would look like in full bloom. So let's do a little imagination. It's the year 2040, Senator Brandis. Your preferred policies have won the day, even after you've long left public life to retire to a life of leisure. What does Florida's education system look like in 2040?
Wow, I think it's a lot of I think it's a lot of tailored, personalized learning. I think I think what we'll find is technology will know a lot. We'll know a lot about us. We'll test in to things, and then we'll basically, once we test in at the beginning of the year, when we go into school, we'll take a standardized test, and it will basically set up, here's where you are today, and then we'll create its own personalized rubric for you to move to the next level. And so utilizing artificial intelligence that will help you move through those different standards, that to me is where we're headed. And we'll be able to offer you that learning in the way that you want to receive it, in the modality that works best for you. So if you say, hey, look, I want to learn all my algebra via soccer analogies, I'll have the ability to learn soccer analogies. If I want to learn biology by putting on a virtual reality headset and diving underwater or learn about the universe in that way, that will not be far off or far out. And we'll be able to interact and will be constantly testing, quizzing, and reminding me of things that I may be about to forget, because it will know in virtual real time via this kind of knowledge algorithm that knows me. And so when I finish my degree, I don't just finish the degree and it says, hey, you've got, you know, a 4.1 GPA. It'll say you have a 4.1 GPA, but here's where your skills really lie. Here's the things that you're really good at. Here's what your concepts that you're going to, that you really understand. And here are the jobs that match up with that exact level of confidence and of competence in different areas. Now that sounds radical, and some people will be scared away by that.
Yeah.
But you've asked me what I think 2040 education looks like. I think it looks a lot more like that than it does like, hey, you got a 3.7 GPA, good luck, you know, and a 1200 SAT. Like that is such basic information. To me, the depth of information, not only here's your competency, but here's your preference. Here's the jobs that we've seen people be successful in, and here's their competency for those jobs and their preference for those jobs. It's so much deeper of knowledge, and we'll be able to know so much more about you and your ability to handle different levels of work, different types of work. And make sure that you're going in and you're spending your resources in areas that you're going to enjoy, and you're going to have the competency and ability to succeed in, or at least know which up front where the challenges may lie for you.
All right. Well, Senator Brandis, I you're in the news a lot for stuff like medical marijuana, criminal justice reform, but I know this was important to you, and I really wanted to get you on the record to talk about this stuff, because it really can be, I believe it's a transformational piece of legislation that, if the districts opt in, could really redefine what public education looks like in the state and be a model for the nation. So I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today, and thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks so much.